I realized that this kind of stuff, it was stealing some of my energy. It was stealing my power. And now that I'm kind of a couple of weeks into this dopamine detox, I'm seeing it just so, so clearly that, like, even that little bit I was doing was limiting me significantly. Welcome again, my friends. We're here, Man vs. World, your favorite show. Time to get into it. Pete, what do we have in the show coming up today?
All right, today we got how to train legs metaphorically, why you shouldn't be too rational, and at the end we're going to talk about how to fix your life with an Excel sheet. But before all of that, I hear you're running a new dopamine detox. Is that correct?
Yes. Okay. I am revisiting the dopamine detox concept personally for the first time in a while. You know, back in 2018, I did the Man of Action series, and that was, like, you know, a big success for the channel and everything. And I was one of the people who popularized the term dopamine detox and took off, and it was great. And since then, I hadn't really done a lot of work with it myself because I kind of got myself to the point that I wanted to be. It's like, you know, I was pretty reasonable with everything that I did. I only used video games only rarely, kind of as a social thing. I didn't spend too much time, you know, looking at other stuff. And I was able to get, you know, a great amount of work done, all that kind of thing. But recently, my goals, they have expanded. I've become far more invested in doing more. You know, it's like at certain points you kind of reach what you're aiming for. And then it's like, well, what's next? And as you start to think about it, you get excited. You get pumped if you think big enough. And sometimes when you do this, you realize, well, I don't think I can do that being the guy that I am today. And the guy that I was being was someone who was still, you know, while it was reasonable and moderate, particularly by today's standards, I was still giving time and attention to things that were not my goals. You know, like, I was getting pretty into UFC. You know, I was following the scene, you know, watching all the fights. I was getting into news a little bit, kind of just scrolling social media, that sort of thing. And I realized that this kind of stuff, it was stealing some of my energy. It was stealing my power. And now that I'm kind of a couple of weeks into this dopamine detox, I'm seeing it just so, so clearly that, like, even that little bit I was doing was limiting me significantly. Because, well, first let me lay out what I'm doing now. Okay, basically I'm doing zero content consumption right now that's, like, electronic. Like, I'm not scrolling any feeds for fun. I'm not just surfing YouTube for fun. None of that kind of stuff. I will make an exception here and there under social things or relationship kind of things. Like, I might watch a show or a movie with my wife because that can just be fine and normal. Not every night for hours. Probably like a once a week kind of thing. I may want to watch a game or a fight with some of my friends or my brothers or something like that. Like a socially, you know, connected thing. I might even play a video game or two with them, you know, hop into a lobby for a little bit here and there, but that would be more like an event, not like an every night kind of thing. And so I think there's reason to gather socially around these kind of fun things. And that's good. That's great. Because if you're using it as a relationship sort of enhancer, something to do together, that I think is natural, healthy, and good. I mean, the same thing I think could be said for sugar. It's like, you know, you have a slice of cake at a birthday party. That's great and fine. That's a way to celebrate, right? It becomes a ceremonial kind of thing, a sacramental thing almost, and under certain circumstances. And I think you do the same thing with dopamine-inducing sort of activities, like going out to watch a movie with some friends or a brother or, you know, something like that. Like, that's a fun thing. That's valuable. But in terms of, like, every day doing that sort of thing, I really think that hamstrings your capability, because as soon as I cut this stuff out, what I found is just my focus wasn't just, you know, increased the little amount, right? You know, my perception was, well, if I just go, like, really hardcore with this, I'll get some gains from it and it's worth it because my goals are serious enough to me. But what I found is that I got way more than I bargained for, because what happens is when your dopamine, right, it's tied to narratives. It's tied to what you say is good and the journey of achieving that good thing. Okay, it's a journey. And when your brain gets sidetracked, it plugs into a different story. Well, all of a sudden, that circuit that was previously all powered up, it now has to get like reinflated to get your that juice flowing again. So just a simple example, like in the past when I would have lunch, I would maybe put some YouTube on. Like if I was home alone, I would just put some YouTube on, watch that while I was eating. Seemed normal and fine enough, right? Or I'd put a podcast on, okay? And again, I don't think this is bad, but what I found is that when I stopped doing that, well, I would just kind of keep thinking a little bit about my work. I would keep like that last task or those floating questions or those ideas I'm working on creatively, they would just start percolating and they would stay with me through lunch and kind of float with me. And then as soon as I was done, I was pumped and ready to get back into work, sometimes with even more insight than I had going into lunch. And so this is very different than what would happen with when I would stop and watch TV. Like it would be a grind. It'd be a kind of a push to get myself back into work. Maybe I'd watch a couple more videos than I needed to. You know, I'd keep watching a little bit after I ate. And then this holds true, especially for the evenings. Like if I'm not tuning out, watching something in the evening, well, I'll be there and I'll actually be clearing emails. I'll be responding to important messages. I'll be doing these kinds of things. And you might be thinking, oh, well, Mark, you that's being a workaholic. And it's like, no, this is me living my life in the way that actually feels the best because I've got big goals and I want them, right? And the pursuit of those goals is extremely satisfying. It's like, it's basically just like turning your real life into a video game. And the only way you can really do that, is have good goals, okay? But then you got to have the neurochemical juice available to keep connected to those goals. So I believe now, like, I'm going to look back at this and it'll be like, this will be the period that marks when I went all in, meaning I completely optimized my life around the pursuit of my highest goals. You know, I went in with it with everything because society today, we have this idea of what normal and healthy balance looks like, right? We say, oh, well, you know, you got to have, you know, some time for friends, you got some time for family, some time to decompress, and, you know, you got to do your work and that kind of thing. And that's true. But that decompression time, what that really means is this is when I'm going to plug in to the hive mind of dopaminergic stimulation. This is when I'm going to allow the dopamine industrial complex to just shove a funnel in my brain and just pour a whole bunch of bullshit into it. And growing up, that's just what it was. It's like, all right, yeah, I just kind of grind through my days. I do this stuff I don't have to do. It's like I go to school or I go to work and I get my chores done and then I get to have fun. Then I get to have me time. I get to play video games. I get to watch porn. I got to just goof off, right? You need that, right? You need it. I need that. It's like, you actually don't. And what I'm realizing is like that whole idea of you've got your work that you trudge through and then you've got this like dessert time of just indulgent activities. That's a horrible model to live life. That's a lie. That's basically, in many ways, that's the product of commercial capitalism. It's the idea that, hey, we've got all this stuff you don't need that we want to sell you. So we're going to convince you that you need time in your life to do these things because everybody does these things and it feels so good. So of course you're going to make the time to do these things. But while you do that, you're stealing all your juice. And that's what actually makes your life into a grind. That's what actually prevents you from being able to go after your goals with full force, right? Like if any of you have ever been really hooked on a video game or hooked on a series, right? There's this, I'll be doing a review on it eventually, but there's this, Rollo Tomasi's got a new book out. It's like the Player's Handbook or something. I forget the actual name of it, but I'm just like in the beginning of it. And he's talking about this idea of churn. There's this idea like that, this constant up and down of emotions is what really keeps people hooked. And he was talking about it in the context of dating apps, right? Like where you kind of got you know, this excitement of the pursuit of like finding the thing, and then you get the thing, or, and then maybe it works out, or maybe it doesn't work out, or maybe, you know, it's like you message her and you get excited and then she doesn't get back to you. It's like this up and down of emotions is what actually keeps us very, very hooked into things. And so he was talking about how like these dating apps, they make this emotional churn so intense, so enticing that it ends up replacing relationships as the goal for most people. Cause like once they have a relationship, well, that churn, all that up and down drama, it's gone. And you think about the things that people get really hooked on. Okay. They have the same sort of element to it, like video games, right? Like if you play a video game, it's like you're gonna have parts that are really hard and they frustrate you. Or then there's gonna be parts where it's an awesome breakthrough and it feels fantastic. Like if you're playing a competitive video game, same deal. It's like you're gonna have these wins that feel amazing where you're the man and you get a, you know, a bunch of points or whatever. And then you have ones where you just get stomped. Emotional up and down. That keeps you hooked. Same, that's like how gambling addiction works. It's like you get addicted to the high, and the reason why the high of the win is so high is because you lose a bunch of the time. And so even our favorite like series are like this. That's what like our series and books and stuff. It's like the main character, he gets some wins, but he also gets beaten down a lot. He has a lot of failure and we get invested in that. But then that makes the breakthrough and the climax so satisfying. And when you plug into that dynamic in other things, like you're following the storyline of your favorite sports team or athlete, churn up and down, right? That's moving stuff inside of your brain. That's making stuff happen in there. That's using energy there. That's going into that, right? Like when you follow a series, like you know, I remember Breaking Bad was like this back in the day, or even Game of Thrones, same sort of thing. It's like you got these huge emotional ups and downs. You get invested into it, and what happens is when you cut all of that out, you get invested in the up and down of your journey. And that's when you start catching fire. That's when you start getting really, really focused, really, really into it, right? Like that's when life starts becoming your game. It starts becoming your adventure. And the only way you're going to do that is if you are really, truly understanding how this kind of like neurochemical chastity works. Like this, the idea of focus to me has like a new meaning in this, you know, umpteenth round of dopamine detoxing, just because I'm at the point where I feel like I can go all in and it's not like a massive impossible stretch for me. Like take me from, you know, 10 years ago, I wouldn't even be able to like consider what I'm doing now. Like it would kill me. I would just like burst into flames because I was so deconditioned to be able to follow my own journey. I also didn't know what my journey was. I didn't have enough skill or clarity around how to go about it. But now since I'm at that point, it's like, holy shit, this is the next level. This is where everybody should be today. And it's like, it's weird to me that this is even a realization for me because it seems so obvious now, but it's just this pervasive idea that, hey, yeah, we got our grind that sucks, and then we kind of push through that so we can just get our little pocket of sweet indulgent bullshit, and that's what we really live for. But that's not the truth, man. That's a lie. And when you can completely eliminate that, well, then that's when life really becomes what you want, at least I think so far. We'll be giving updates as we go, but I'm feeling extremely confident in that.
Well, yeah, that'll be interesting to hear, you know, because you're a couple weeks in. It'll be interesting to see where you're at. How long are you planning on doing this?
I mean, at least the way I'm doing it now, at least for a month. After a month, I may have like one day where I experiment with like, you know, doing more like one cheat day or something. But right. I gotta see, like I've messed around with that with food and things like that at different points, and I'll have to see. But my impression is that those things actually just keep you addicted. They kind of like it like never lets the wound really close. It never lets the adaptation fully occur. And so I'll play around with it, but if I feel weaker after doing it, I might just keep it, you know? I might just keep it as is. So it also depends on what kind of goals you have and how serious you are. I think there are periods in your life where you just don't really know what you're doing and you can't fill your time. And in those scenarios, I think it is more appropriate to be in a more consumption-based mode where you're learning, you're taking stuff in. And there's a way to do that productively where you're actually doing it in a way that serves your goals rather than just escaping. But that's kind of a little bit of a different thing. But I think there's definitely something to be said about those kinds of periods. So it's like if I find myself in that sort of period again, well, I mean, I think I could just set a bigger goal then and just get re-bought in. But sometimes, especially when you're younger or you've just spent your whole life doing something you don't want, making that transition into a truly self-directed life where you are pursuing like massively enticing goals, that can be a little tricky and people may not be able to do that all in at once. So
yeah, it's true. You know, you're at a point now where it's like, if you want to fill your time with work, like you probably can. A lot of people are probably in a position where it's like, man, I'd love to spend all my time doing this, but I just can't. But that's when adding in other stuff too is like, the other, you know, riding your bike, you know, for 4 hours and thinking through complex problems idea kind of comes back in. It's like, you don't have to fill your time with, you know, just junk. Like you can go for a walk and stuff, and that's a good way to fill your time.
Yeah. Yeah. I'm not just working. Like actually right now I am just working. I don't want to be doing that though. Like this, it's more like, you know what we're doing. We got a lot on our plate right now, but that's not how I want to be. I want to be like including more physical training, more music, like playing music and stuff like that. But so eventually we'll get to that point. But
one quick story before we move on to this next thing. I remember going to the last movie I went to go see with my mom was Mission Impossible. And it wasn't, I think, the latest one, but it was like the one before that. And I tell you, man, this movie from start to finish. So you're talking
like years ago?
Yeah.
Okay. That was the last movie you've seen?
Yeah.
Well, okay.
So, well, that's the last movie I went to the movies for. You know? Okay,
fair enough.
So I went to see this movie with my mom, and from start to finish, it was just the most intense, insane movie I've ever seen. Just the suspense buildup was just running through, and it only resolved like at the very last scene. And it was incredible. It was an amazing movie. But I remember leaving the movie theater, and I honestly don't like movies that much, because when I watch a good movie, it makes me feel like dissatisfied with my own like story. It's like, man, my life's boring compared to that. I want to be running from helicopters, you know, not really, but you know, I kind of do, you know, a little bit.
Exactly. That's the idea, is that like you get hooked in that stuff and you get it. People start living their life that way because
vicariously.
Yeah, yep. And like that's what you see with like the comic book stuff, you see it with anime stuff, you see it with video game stuff, you see it with porn. I mean, it's just like guys wanting to live in alternate realities, and it's like, yeah, I get it. That stuff's exciting. It gets your blood pumping. It seems like, oh! But the problem is, the more energy you put into that, the worse your real life becomes. And what's crazy is that if you took all of that energy out of that bullshit and you put it into your real life, and you did this for an extended period of time, your life would become your own movie. It would become as compelling. It would. It really would. Like men are meant to seek adventure. It's in your blood. It's built into you. It's baked into your DNA. Okay? It's like you're made for this shit as long as you let yourself like pursue it. You let yourself you develop the focus.
Yeah, absolutely. Alrighty. Well, next up, our buddy Shamas wrote in an interesting question from the Self-Mastery Club. He says, hey man, if I speak quite outlandishly about my views and people don't enjoy it, for instance, my family or just socially, is that a bad thing? Sometimes I honestly just don't agree with things being said and I feel like saying stuff which might ruffle feathers. Is this a form of virtue signaling? And then he goes on to say, you know, I try to do it with humility because clearly I have gaps in my knowledge in lots of areas, but I do feel I have important things to say at times, and things nowadays honestly feel a bit crazy. I know I'm not an expert in the world's mechanisms, but I have two masters, economics and politics, and I'm really keen on how the world works, and sometimes I do say things that people are offended by. Maybe it's a waste of time since I'm not actually in office or speaking out in terms of actually bringing solutions into society. What are your thoughts?
So this is a great question. One that becomes, you know, important in today's day and age with how polarized politics are. You know, I even did a couple of videos about this back during the pandemic because of how tense things were and how just at each other's throats, both sides were, with this kind of stuff. And I think the way that, you got to look at it as is like, it's a game. Okay. Life's a game. It's a serious game, but it's like a game in the sense that you get to decide how you want to play it. Okay. And when it comes to social interaction, like if people are talking about politics around you and they are speaking ideas that just don't jive with you, you've got a few different options. What can you do? You can just walk away, right? And maybe you want to do that, but you do that all the time. Well, you're going to start feeling controlled. You're going to maybe start feeling like a little bit of a wuss, kind of like, oh, I got to go run away. They're talking politics now. And I know people like this. They actually cannot have any political conversation around them, especially politics that they disagree with, because they get so upset and they can't handle it. So that's the thing that happens. Some people take that route. Other people, they just fight, you know. This actually happened the other night. I was out at a bar meeting my cousin who was in town from out of town, and it was, you know, I was catching up with him, and there was the NBA finals on, and we were sitting there talking. We started talking about politics, and there was this old dude next to us. And he was just chiming in. You know, it's like guy at a bar by himself, older guy, and he just kept joining in our conversation and stuff like that. And then my cousin started talking about like just some of the bills and stuff going. He was talking about the rules around like talking to children when they were like about sexuality and sexual orientation under like fourth grade. It was like the left has called the Don't Say Gay bill in Florida. And he's actually, you know, I don't want to give any more of his information away, but he was saying something like how that's not a good thing. And then the other guy chimed in, he's like, well, what's the problem with that? And just kind of gave our take on it, and then he started getting real mad, and he got really mad when like we were talking about Trump and how like, oh, if Trump held a rally here like the place would get shut down, like the story was my cousin drove through University of Delaware where we both actually went to school. And he said the roads were completely empty. He went through totally fine. And he said something like, well, if Trump was here, I wouldn't have been able to move. And the other guy got so mad. The old guy, he was like, oh, not here in Delaware. We don't play that. And he just started freaking out, like saying that people in Delaware, like no one would come to see Trump there. And I'm just like, dude, do you know how many people come to Trump's rallies? Like, we weren't even like, we were actually talking about how like, you know, the pros and cons of Trump, like with the things we like that he did, but then also like how he's like kind of a moron and he screwed a lot of stuff up and everything like that. And anyway, he was just like, he started going off on us about this kind of thing. And like, he starts slamming on the table, talking about how his family's been here for, was it 400 years? I believe is what he said, 400 years. I'm like, wait, so you were like Native. We didn't even get into that. Like, but anyway, he started freaking out. The bartender had to come over and tell this guy, listen, you got to chill out or you got to leave. So you can be that guy. That was a long story to say. You can be that guy. You can be the guy who freaks out, loses it, slams the table, and gets, you know, asked to leave the bar. Okay. And it sounds like maybe that's the side you're leaning to a little bit. And I get that, because you get that feeling of self-righteousness, right?
Right.
But if you have any sort of conscience, which actually this guy did have, like he went to the bathroom, he came back and he apologized actually to us. Oh. He said, sorry, I got too emotional, didn't want to, you know, get into a fight with you guys, and he left. And so good on him for doing that, but you don't want to be that guy, right? You don't want to have to go through that process of like having to go to your like, it's like, sorry, I threw the turkey out the window at Thanksgiving, Grandma. It's just like, you don't want to be that guy. So what my point is that like the other option is you can make it like more fun, right? Like you can get people's permission to do this kind of stuff. This is how I approach it. So if someone starts saying stuff that I don't agree with, old me would have just launched into like fighting them, shooting down their points or whatever. It's like, well, the way I would do it now is be like, well, you know, I don't agree with anything you just said, but I don't want to start a fight. However, if you're curious, I'm happy to share my ideas with you if you want to hear them. And so I make them say that they want to hear what I have to say. And if they say that, well, then I can say it. And it's like, if they start getting mad about it, I can always say, yeah, okay, so it doesn't seem like you really do want to hear anyone else's opinion. And that's fine. You can keep your ears closed if you would like. You don't need to listen to me, but here's what I think of it. And so that's one way to do it if you're in like very polite conversation and you want to do it that way. Another time is another side of it is like maybe you don't want to give them the choice because they're not giving you the choice, right? Maybe they're just spouting their beliefs off in your face and, you know, you don't feel like just taking it, right? You want to be able to share your opinion and you can just do it. Just put it out there. You know, the easiest way to do it is to just be like, here's this perspective. What do you think of that? Here's this perspective. What do you think of that? I've heard this before and that made a lot of sense to me. Doesn't seem to really jive with what you're saying though. And just like put them in the position to be the ones talking. Because if you're the one who has to talk, right? Well, then you're the one who has to really justify your opinions and you got to get all into it and everything like that. And so there's just easier ways to hold your ground rather than feeling like you have to like put on some kind of political dissertation about what it is you think, what it is you believe, all that kind of stuff. So that's the way that I found like those two options of getting permission first or just being more inquisitive, like putting my positions out in the forms of questions that they then have to dance with. That then, you know, seems to be like it keeps conflict to a minimum without leaving you feeling like a pussy.
I like that a lot. You know, I used to get into a lot of bouts a couple years ago, probably around 2016 when everybody else was, you know, and I definitely dragged people into conversations they didn't want to have, which I kind of regret. But on the other hand, it does get you pretty good at knowing your stuff, man. Like, if you want to know your stuff, have it vehemently attacked by other people is, you know, a good way to not only know what you believe, but why you believe it, which is very important.
Yeah. And one of the things that's like worth doing too, especially if you've got good people to talk to, is like very few people actually have good conversations like this. And they probably rarely even view them, right? Because I've got friends who are far more liberal leaning than me, and they know stuff that I don't know, right? They're like, by having real conversations with them, a lot of times I'll learn stuff that I didn't know. And I was like, man, okay, if you're just looking at those facts, I get why you got to this opinion. Sometimes, right. Not all the time. But like, you can make your position much stronger when you try and find the best opposition, right? You can steel man your own arguments. And it makes you far less, you know, polemic in the way that you speak. It allows you to connect with others because you can validate, like if you can validate the truth in the other side's stance, they're much less likely to be hostile. You can be like, hey, man, I hear what you're saying about this, this, and this. Like, that thing over there, that's totally screwed up. That's absolutely messed up. But, like, here's this other piece. And it's like, how do I hold with the true parts of what you're saying with this? And then you can actually start creating a synthesis of thought, a synthesis of perspective. And that's where you know, I think, get the best perspective. It's when everything's broken down into little sound bites and everybody's stuck inside of their own news bubble, where they don't get anything from the other side, that's when things get the most disgusting. So,
definitely.
I don't know. Just some thoughts.
Alrighty, guys. This next clip is from Captain Sinbad on How to Train Legs. Now, hold on. Don't click off. We're not talking about actually training legs. This is a metaphor, guys. Okay, so don't worry about it. Don't sweat it.
Before I do this, I was definitely that guy in college who skipped leg day.
Oh, really?
Oh, yeah. Leg day just became like, we would like maybe do a little bit of leg press and then do some more biceps. So, yeah. Oh, not man. Anymore, though. Not anymore. All right, let's see what we got here.
To not do useful things with your evenings rather than just like mindlessly numb out on some TV show or video games or junk food, it's like not training legs. This is like the oldest meme in the lifting community. It's like, this guy probably doesn't, he skips leg day, right? Skipping leg day is terrible because half your reserves of testosterone and muscle, like your legs, your quads, these are a huge area where you can build muscle. And there is a principle known as transferred strength, where when you build muscle in one area or you build strength in one area, it actually transfers to other parts. So theoretically, if my squat got better, that would translate to my bench press. Maybe part of this is because I'd have more like just core strength built up. My posterior chain might get stronger, but also I'd become just a higher testosterone person if I have stronger legs, which would just like produce more growth hormone, help my bench. I know I'm getting a little bro science-y here, but I think the science is ultimately there. Train legs in life. Train your legs, both physically when you're at the gym. Don't skip leg day, but also don't skip the leg day of your life's work. Do something with your evenings that's inspired.
It's an interesting idea there. That idea of like leg day for your life being what you do with your evenings. I didn't actually watch this clip beforehand, so it ties in nicely with what we're talking about with the dopamine detox stuff, like very, very well. And I agree with him. Obviously, I agree with him. But I think it's a more complex question if you actually try to solve that, right? It's like, do something productive with your evenings. What does that mean? So one of the things that I think is really good to understand when you're trying to answer that question is that not all productive work taxes you the same, all right? Like, you have different faculties and capabilities. They're like different energy reserves. Like, think about it as like you got these different gas tanks, okay? Like, you got one gas tank that's like your creative gas tank, all right? This is like the one that is really, really important because it's the one that lets you come up with big ideas. It's the one that lets you confront difficult problems and try to solve them. And if you're someone who is a writer or a business owner or something like that, and you're doing strategy work or you're creating something, that's the gas tank that's being drained there when you do that. But for most people, unless you've really trained yourself, you can't run that all day, right? Like, you might struggle to do that kind of work for an hour even, especially if you still, you know, haven't fully dopamine detoxed and that sort of thing. So if you're doing that kind of work during the day, trying to do more of that kind of work in the evening can be pretty tough. So for example, if you are, you know, it's like, oh, I'm going to be spending my days as doing my writing career, or I'm going to be spending my days solving these complex business problems. Comes to the evening, if you're going to try and write songs, that could be hard. Like, it's like, oh, I'm going to try and create these songs on my guitar. You're going to be trying to tap out that same gas tank. It's going to be difficult. So you got to learn how to balance this with where you're at, with your energy reserves, where they are. Because, like, just like he was talking with leg day, it's like leg day, you got your endurance strength, you've got your, you know, short burst strength that uses the creatine phosphate cycle, you got like the mid-tier stuff. It's like same thing for this. So like in the evenings, maybe you want to do more manual stuff, mindless stuff. Like if you wanted to still do music, maybe you practice scales rather than try to write songs. I remember I've been doing a lot of this creative kind of work myself, and the other evening I just told my wife, don't worry, I'll do the dishes, because I just wanted to do something that was mindless. I just wanted to like turn off. If this felt good, oh, it felt so good to just like do the freaking dishes. But if I was doing the dishes all day, I would go crazy, right? I was like, I want to use my mind. And then you have the social aspect too. It's like maybe in the evenings it could be something productive of like you call friends, you call guys in your mastermind group, okay? Because that's another thing. If you're talking to people all day, well then you're not going to probably want to talk to people in the evening unless you're an extreme extrovert. Or if you don't talk to people all day, well then all of a sudden that gas tank is untapped and you'll actually get some juice out of it and it'll feel good and fulfilling. So thinking about these different kinds of gas tanks or different sorts of activity in the process of trying to fill your days and work this leg day of life, I think that's pretty crucial.
Yeah, absolutely. Man, that's good stuff. All right, next thing we got is from Robert Greene on why you can be too rational.
You can be too rational. You can be too cautious. You can be too logical in your attitude towards life. The metaphor I use is of a horse and the person riding the horse. So I'm saying that the horse is your emotional self. It's all that animal energy. It's that those hormones coursing through you and making you excited or angry, etc. And the rider of that horse is your rational self, is your frontal cortex, or your executive decisions, where you go through a rational process of coming to a decision about what needs to be done. Horses are very sensitive creatures. They pick up your energy very quickly. So if they sense that you are not controlling them, that you're worried, that you're fearful, that you're kind of like, you know, you don't know how to control this horse, they're going to take control. But if you hold the reins too tightly, if you're the opposite type, where you're too much trying to control them, you're holding the bit in their mouth really tightly, you're trying to make sure that they only do exactly what you want, the horse isn't comfortable, right? It doesn't like that. You want to have some hold on the reins, but you also want to let the animal have some of its own power, because that horse is very powerful. You can't write a book, you can't start a business, you can't do anything in life.
Yeah, I think that's it's a really, really good point. And this ties into one of my core models, this idea of the primal self versus the terminal self. So it's like the primal self would be the horse, terminal self would be the rider. And yeah, we got kind of two main imbalances. One is where the instinct, the emotional energy, it just represses the rational side. You know, we just do what feels good. Even if we stop to think about it, we know it's not going to serve us well, right? We don't want to live like that. But he's talking about the flip side where you actually are trying to be overly rational. You're trying to control your emotions and shut them up and just do the most logical thing. Now, one of the things we got to realize is that just because we're talking about our logical mind doesn't mean that it's perfectly logical. Like we are very prone to logical flaws. You know, like it's very easy to make an assumption about something. It's like, oh, logically I should do this. When in reality, it's like, that's not a good idea at all. And one of the best ways that we're going to be able to kind of gauge that, right? Like, is if there's a lot of pushback from our primal self, right? If our primal self is just constantly like, no, I don't want to do this. No, I don't want to do this. No, I don't want to do this. Well, then is it really still the best idea for us? You know, sometimes it is. Sometimes, you know, it's a matter of needing to retrain, recondition our primal self, but maybe we need to find a better way to do it. Maybe we need to do it with a different character. Like, instead of trying to beat ourselves into submission, we need to learn how to motivate ourselves into taking positive action. So what he's talking about is 100% real. And one of the ways that I think like a lot of guys experience this over rationality the most that really cuts you off from your primal power is when you start going into should mode. This is something I see all the time when I'm coaching guys is I'll ask them what they want because I need to know what they want if I'm going to do any good coaching. Because, you know, that's what good coaching is I get you to where you want to be. And so I got to figure out, what do you want? And what a lot of guys give me at first is they give me all the things they feel like they should do. Okay? Should, if you feel like you should do something, that's your rational mind there. That's your rational mind trying to control your emotional self. And as long as you start with should, then you'll never get to where you want to be. So you have to start with want. And it doesn't mean you just let that go freely, right? You start with want because that's where the power is. That's where the energy is. And you can think of that as like the big block of motivational marble, all right? That's the big thing, okay? It's a big old statue, potentially, of emotion, of motivation. And we have to use our rational mind to chisel it away, to shape it into something that's actually good. So you start with what you really want, and maybe you gotta think really big. Maybe you gotta get really outrageous before you start tapping into anything that actually lights something inside of you, okay? But once you find a goal that lights something inside of you, start there, work with that, and then start trying to make it, all right, well, how can we rationally do that? Well, maybe we rationally can't do exactly that, but we can do something over here that is like that, and it gives us the same spark. It's right. So it's like go emotion first, then rational. So many guys, they try and start rational. I should do this and I should do this and I should do this and I should do this. Problem is, if you start there, it's gonna be very difficult for you to find the juice, to find that drive. So watch out for the shoulds. They will strangle you.
Do you have you had a client who's just like, I don't know what I want? And it's just like, well, you know, how do you tap into that? What's a practical example of something you could do to find that? Is it just a matter of exploring a variety of different options?
Sort of. That's probably the weakest way to do it, though, because you can just you know, you can come up with a million like methods for going out and look at this and look at this and try this out and blah, blah, blah. That's not what I found to be the most effective. What's most effective is to look at, okay, you don't know what you want. Well, what do you not want? What are you certain that you do not like in your current life? And usually we can find some emotional charge there. And it's like, well, what would it look like if we didn't have that in your life? Okay. And we think about that and it's like, oh, do you want that? It's like, oh yeah, I do want that. And so we start there. And for a lot of guys, this means cleaning up problems first, sorting out like major issues. Like usually when guys don't know what they want to do, it's because they've got major issues unaddressed in their current life. And what's magical about this, it happens with everyone. Everyone. It's like once you start getting those problems that are in front of you taken care of, it unlocks solutions. It'll start fixing things for you. It'll start showing you what comes next. Like life, you know, this is, if, you know, I've heard a lot of interesting ideas about, you know, reality being a simulation. It's like some kind of programmed thing, and it's kind of like a game. And it's, this is one of the things that I think is most compelling because of how true I've seen it to be, which is that like your life is like a video game in that you got to level up. But in order to level up, you got to go through the level that you're currently at. And many of us, we're just ignoring the boss of our current level. We're ignoring the challenges of our current level. It's like, yeah, all this stuff sucks over here. My health is horrible. I waste all my time. I'm doing stuff I don't want to do. I have no relationships, but what's my dream career? It's like, I live in squalor, and it's like, I don't know how I want to make $1 billion yet. It's like, yeah, okay. Well, how about you just start at level one, clean your room, which is why the Jordan Peterson thing got so popular, because it works and it unlocks the next step.
Right on. Awesome. Alrighty, guys. Last but not least, here is Joker from Better Bachelor on how to fix your life with an Excel sheet.
Let's check this out.
Everybody I've ever talked to that says, oh, life is overwhelming and I don't know how to do X or Y or Z. And it's, I say, put it on paper. Just the act of putting them on paper so they're tangible in front of you will lessen the overwhelming feeling. That's just a start. Lack of friends. Can I do something about it? Yes. So I leave that blank. I just put a little check box next to it. Can I do more traveling? Yep. Can I build muscle? Yeah. Can I lose weight? Yes. Can I change world hunger? I'll put a red X. The Buffalo Bills winning the Super Bowl? Nope. Can't do anything about that. Can I set up a men's retreat? Yep. Can I fix my spending habits? Yep. Can I play too many video games? Yep. Okay, so this means these two columns are going to be blank right here. So let's say you lack friends. What can you actually do about that? Obviously, meeting more people. And again, this is simple, guys. I'm not saying this is going to necessarily meet your goals, but it's to get some creative juices flowing to try to get the ball rolling for a lot of you. Because again, it can be overwhelming. What's an action plan for that? Join a club. Anything that's bothering you, get it in ink in front of you. Because what'll happen is a lot of times guys will lay down for bed or they're doing something. They say, man, I wish I had more friends. And they think about it for a couple minutes and that thought goes to the back of their brain. It doesn't go away because then all of a sudden you're thinking like, I wish I made more money. I wish I had a nicer apartment. I wish I could buy more furniture. And it starts stacking up.
So he's right on. Getting stuff written down is massively helpful. Like that's what I do. If I start getting overwhelmed and anxious reflexively at this point, I just start writing down all the things on my mind. And it'll feel like, a lot of times it'll feel like there's a million things swirling around in there. And when I write it down and I actually kind of look at the list and take out the stuff that doesn't actually matter, it's like never more than like 2 to 4 things. It's like, it's rare that you really have a huge list of things that are actually upsetting you. It's just that our brain is not super good at parallel processing. So even just a few things, a lot of times it's just 2, okay? That'll make your brain's like, oh, I'm so overwhelmed. It's like, no, you have 2 problems. but you don't see that until you take the time to kind of, you know, separate the threads. Now, what he's talking about here is a great first step, but the problem that a lot of guys are going to run into when they do this is that they're going to, all right, here's the problem. You know, I'm lonely. Okay. Can I do something about it? Yes. What's my action plan? Join a club. Okay. Now, that is answering it all from that terminal side of your psyche, from that rational, intellectual side. But if you really want to solve that, it's got to become a conversation between these two sub-personalities, between your rational and emotional self. And this is why I teach this kind of self-talk in all of my work, is because, you know, the idea of joining a club, invariably, the emotional response to that is, it's just like, I don't wanna. Because usually it's very unclear. Like, it's like, well, what club am I gonna do? And then that has to become a big conversation. Like, do I have the time for that? Where am I gonna go? Like, then you have all the social anxieties, like, well, I don't like meeting new people and all this kind of thing. And so, like, you have to find a action plan that actually resonates with you, right? Like, just coming up with a theoretical one doesn't mean shit. Like, you actually have to have one that you can get yourself emotionally on board with. So that's probably the biggest thing that I would add to what he's talking about here, is that you got to take it another step if you really want to do this thing, because you got to get the primal buy-in as well. Otherwise, you're just going to be sitting there beating yourself up, be like, you're not following your action plan. You should do this, you know, back to the shoulds. And then you're just going to feel worse and worse about yourself. And you're like, fuck this, I'm never journaling again. So you got to make sure you take it all the way through, and you got to work with where you're at. Sometimes you're going to have problems where it's like, oh, I'm lonely. Okay, well, you got to go make friends, because you don't have any friends, maybe. You know, if you do, maybe it's like, well, I could call a friend. And you check your primal self. It's like, yeah, like, we could do that. All right, we'll do that. And boom, a solution's there. But sometimes there's not going to be an easy solution. And sometimes what you're going to want to do is, like, shelf it. Be like, all right, I'm not focusing on this right now. Yeah, I'm lonely right now, but the reality is that that's okay for right now, because I need to focus on X, Y, and Z. And then once I have more time, money, and space, that's what I'm going to socialize, because it's going to feel better. And you give yourself permission to not solve a problem. And that sometimes solves it. It makes that emotional angst go away. And it's one of these things you're going to have to work out for yourself, but work it out. Don't just think that the first thing that pops into your head is the answer. If it doesn't click, that's not the answer. People think that just because they have a rational response to something means they found the answer. No, you found the answer when you actually are emotionally okay, or you're emotionally willing to do the thing that will make you okay. That's when you've gotten the solution. And developing that capability comes from knowledge of self, self-mastery, of getting these sub-personalities working together properly.
Right on, guys. If you have not seen last week's episode, go ahead and click this button right here. It'll be somewhere over here. And thank you for making it to the end. Go ahead and share this video with someone who needs it. And we'll see you next week.
Thanks, you guys. Thank you guys for showing up. Ooh, yeah. See you all in the next one.